9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
The European Union unveils a broad plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, but the proposal faces a long road ahead.
The idea, the broad strokes of this plan have support in the EU, in the EU capitals, in the parliament, but there's going to be a lot of disagreements about the details.
And what this week's big bank earnings can tell us about the recovery. Plus, how a new rule protects patients from surprise medical bills. It's Wednesday, July 14th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell says the central bank is monitoring inflation closely. In testimony before a House panel today, he said pandemic-related bottlenecks and other supply constraints have led to the high demand and low supply that's driven price increases.
Inflation has increased notably and will likely remain elevated in coming months before moderating.
As we reported on the show yesterday, U.S. inflation rose at its fastest pace in 13 years last month. The producer price index released today increased 7.3% from a year earlier. The index measures the prices suppliers charge businesses and other customers. Facebook is seeking the recusal of Federal Trade Commission Chair Lina Khan as the agency considers whether to file a new antitrust case against the company. Facebook argues that Khan can't be impartial, citing her history of criticizing the company and other big tech firms. Amazon filed a similar recusal petition last month. An FTC spokeswoman declined to comment. Khan has said in the past that she would consult with FTC ethics officials on questions of recusal. A lot more big bank earnings today. Bank of America more than doubled its profit in the latest quarter, thanks in part to a decision to release $2.2 billion of reserves it had set aside to protect against bad loans. But the bank's revenue was down because of low rates and less demand for loans, missing analysts' expectations. Citigroup saw growth in consumer banking, including spending on credit cards. It also released $2.4 billion in loan loss reserves, helping boost its profit for the quarter to more than $6 billion. Revenue fell 12%, but was above expectations. Wells Fargo reported its highest revenue since the start of the pandemic, making it the only lender among the nation's four biggest to post an increase. That was due to higher valuations on its venture capital and private equity investments and growth in its mortgage banking income. And Delta Airlines posted its first quarterly profit since the pandemic began, as more Americans travel and thanks to government aid that helped it cover salaries. The airline reported profit of $652 million after five straight quarters of losses. But corporate and international travel are still lagging behind pre-pandemic levels. Coming up, how the European Union and China aim to address climate change.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The European Union and China unveiled broad plans to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, joining the Biden administration in laying out bold initiatives to address climate change. Both plans require changes that'll increase costs for industries and consumers. And the proposals in the EU remain just that and are far from a done deal. Joining me now with more is Paris correspondent Matthew Dalton. Hi, Matthew. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Anne-Marie. Thank you.
So let's talk more about the European Union's plan. Tell us about the broad scope of it and which industries it would impact. Give us some key points here.
It would impact almost all industries, everything from electricity generation to airplanes to industrial manufacturing to agriculture to shipping. The plan really intends to apply across the entire economy to limit emissions from every sector to leave no loopholes where emissions could kind of crop up while the EU is regulating them in other sectors. The goal of this reform is to be extremely broad. Particular sectors that are going to be hit are the ones that are most polluting. So there's electricity generation. The goal is really to phase out coal, certainly. There are still countries, particularly in Eastern Europe, that rely quite a bit on coal-fired electricity. Poland is the biggest one of them. So they're trying to target that. They want to boost the share of renewable energy, solar, wind, certain kinds of biomass in the use of electricity generation in the EU. So they want to make renewables 40% of all energy used in the EU by 2030. It's really everything.
Given all of that information, how much of this right now is pledges for the future versus how much is direct action?
Well, this is all a proposal. It's proposed legislation. The way the EU works is the European Commission, the EU's executive arm, proposes legislation, and then it has to be approved by the EU national governments. There are 27 of them, and the European Parliament. So this is still several years away and lots of negotiations from becoming law. The idea, the broad strokes of this plan have support in the EU, in the EU capitals, in the parliament, but there's going to be a lot of disagreements about the details. Some of those disagreements center on one of the sectors that the EU is proposing to regulate for the first time is the housing sector. And the energy providers in those sectors are basically going to have to cover the pollution of the energy that they sell. And that the worry is that's going to result in a potentially significant jump in consumers' energy bills.
And part of this broad plan is aimed at getting China and other countries to make their own pledges to reduce emissions. And we actually had some news from China today as well, which outlined plans to launch the world's largest emissions trading program. Matthew, what can you tell us about how that'll be implemented?
So it's China's first nationwide effort to regulate carbon dioxide emissions. It sets up an emissions trading plan similar to the plan that the EU has. And thousands of industrial facilities and power facilities across the country are going to be trading allowances. A Chinese official said that the price of a ton of carbon would probably be less than $10, maybe around $7, which is quite a bit less than where the price is right now in the EU. And so there's still going to be a big difference. One of the dynamics of what's called the Paris Agreement, which is the global agreement to reduce emissions, is that the developed world is being called upon to do more of the heavy lifting because their emissions per capita are much higher. And that's still true of even a country of China, which is its GDP per capita is less than a quarter of most countries in Europe and much less than that in the US. So China, the sort of lower price for a ton of carbon, it reflects the fact that China's emissions are still going to be growing in the coming years, whereas they're falling in the US and the EU. Now, one thing I didn't mention in the European proposal is it has the world's first tax on imported goods based on the greenhouse gas emissions that were emitted to make those goods. So this is a proposal that the EU is putting in place to stop industries from moving their production overseas outside of the EU and then exporting back to the EU to take advantage of the fact that no other country is regulating carbon dioxide emissions as tightly as the European Union is. And another thing that the proposal aims to do is to send a powerful signal to countries that export a lot to the EU, such as China, such as Russia, that they should start regulating carbon emissions.
Now, the U.S., of course, has made its own pledges on climate. How would the EU and China plans impact U.S. companies abroad?
Well, U.S. companies operating in the European Union would have to abide by the exact same rules as every other company in Europe. So that means paying for allowances if you're an airline flying in and out of Europe. That means also if you're a U.S.-owned shipping company or U.S.-operated shipping company shipping to Europe, you would be covered by these emissions rules. And then lots of U.S. companies have factories in Europe, and they would be subject to the exact same rules. And then this border tax, this carbon border tax proposal, adds another element in that not only U.S. companies operating in Europe would be impacted, but U.S. companies exporting to Europe from the U.S. would be impacted. They would have to buy allowances in the particular sectors that are covered to cover their emissions back in the U.S. The carbon border tax is going to apply to steel, aluminum, cement, and fertilizers in its first iteration, and then other sectors are going to be added.
What are you hearing from industries that would be impacted in response to these plans?
Well, I think most major industries realize the fact that the response to climate change is something that they can't stop it. And many industries don't want to stop it. I think they acknowledge that they have a big role to play in fighting climate change. And it's a bit of a sea change compared to, let's say, 10, 15 years ago, particularly, I think, for U.S. companies, where that many were lobbying quite fiercely against climate change regulation. They're still lobbying against it, but there's an acknowledgement, particularly with the consensus around the Paris Accord and with the Biden administration coming into office and pledging some similarly tough action on climate change, that these are going to be the rules of the road.
That's Wall Street Journal Paris correspondent Matthew Dalton. Matthew, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Anne-Marie.
And finally, if you've ever gotten treated in an emergency room and saw a doctor or specialist outside your insurance network, you may have found yourself hit with an unexpected bill. And not a small one either. Patients getting surprise out-of-network bills pay more than 10 times what in-network patients paid out-of-pocket, according to a recent study in the journal Health Affairs. But new federal rules are on the way to make surprise medical bills a thing of the past. Our healthcare reporter Stephanie Armour says the No Surprises Act goes into effect January 1st.
It basically says, look, if you get emergency care, you can't get a surprise medical bill if you were seen by someone out of network. And it also basically says that if you go in a non-emergency situation, you also need to be informed upfront about what the cost would be so that you're not surprised. So there's a lot of different components to this, but basically it sets up the buffer that protects patients from these surprise bills and implements what health organizations have to do.
You can hear more about the coming rules on today's edition of our sister podcast, Your Money Briefing. And that's what's news for this Wednesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.